Welcome to episode 43 of the Golf Talk Podcast, the first of 2007. I'm Eric Barzeski, and again, Jeff Smith is joining me from Seattle, Washington. Hello.
Hey, Eric.
How are you, man?
I am doing excellent.
That's good.
Apart from the pelting rain, I've gotten actually a couple of rounds of golf in here the last 3 weeks, so.
Yeah, well, it was 55 or 60 here in Pennsylvania over Christmas. You know, I played golf last week.
Nice.
El Nino is good for something, and we're not talking Sergio Garcia here.
No, so, we'll take it.
It's not good for you, though. You're on the wrong coast.
Yeah, well, this has been the rainiest winter in recent memory here in Washington. So
I'll take a rainy winter over a snowy winter any day.
Yeah, exactly.
The guys are done with their winter breaks on the PGA Tour, though. The winners, of course, playing in the Mercedes Championship in Hawaii, where they don't have to worry about snow very often. Vijay Singh walked away with his first Mercedes-Benz championship despite never finishing outside the top eight in something like seven appearances. Quite an impressive win. He'd finished twice to Stuart Appleby twice in the past 3 years. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. Turns into a bride this year at age 43.
Yeah, had an excellent four rounds. Just strung them together and played really steady. I was impressed. You know, I think he enjoyed himself, and I really enjoyed his final thoughts as he was receiving the trophy. I mean, he's always good for a soundbite or two. So
his total at minus 14, rounds of 4-under and 3-under throughout the tournament, winning by 2 over Adam Scott. So Adam Scott starting off well after finishing last year well by winning the Tour Championship, picking up right where he left off, basically. Vijay Singh, the oldest player now, you were telling me, passing Byron Nelson?
Yeah, passing Byron Nelson.
Byron Nelson.
I think it was Byron Nelson for most wins in his 40s, so pretty impressive. Somebody asked him, you know, how much longer can he continue to play at this level? You know, speaking of Singh sound bites, he says, well, Fred Funk won a golf tournament when he was 48, and I'm a lot bigger and a lot stronger than Freddie Funk. So,
That you are, Vijay.
He's got away with words.
The win netted him $1.1 million to start off the year, $630,000 going to Adam Scott, Trevor Immelman finishing third with 410, and Davis Love, of all people, popping up at $260,000 in fourth with J.B. Holmes and Will McKenzie. Needless to say, my fantasy team didn't do so well. Stuart Appleby's down there in 13th out of 30 people, so eh.
But, yeah, well, I should have had last year's prediction this year. I think we had predictions last year.
I know.
And I said he was going to finish way behind. Of course, he comes from behind to beat Vijay last year. But he wasn't there this year.
Right. Vijay Singh now, of course, winning 4,500 FedEx Cup points. Adam Scott at 2,700. Tiger Woods, of course, at zero since he didn't travel to Hawaii.
Tiger's really having a tough year in 2007 so far.
He's winless, man. Him and Phil. They've gotten up to a bad start.
Yeah, I hope he can turn it around here before long. Because
Vijay's going to be the new number one soon.
Yeah.
Yes. Really, a bad year for Vijay last year. So maybe he found the secret again this year. And the one thing that I noticed was, hey, he was going with the belly putter again. He's flipped back and forth several times throughout the years, you know.
Yeah, but, well, you never quite know what he's going to be playing from week to week. But, yeah, it was good, and he was putting very well.
No, I'm waiting for him to putt left-handed.
That could be an improvement. You never know.
Of course, this was the first PGA Tour event on the Golf Channel. They covered all four rounds. Did you get a chance to watch much of the coverage on the Golf Channel?
Yeah, sure did. I watched it, and I was pretty impressed. It took me a little while to catch on. It was much different than kind of the polished, stoic coverage that you get on some of the other NBC, CBS. You know, they had a good time with it, and I enjoyed the coverage. I thought it was pretty good.
I was fairly impressed as well. I still think Rich Lerner and Jerry Foltz have naked pictures of somebody because I can't for the life of me figure out why they're on the air as often as they are. And Nick Faldo getting some complaints from people as not being his usual self. Maybe a little stiff, you know, the jokes felt a little old or a little stale or a little contrived. Kelly Tillman, by most accounts, did a reasonably good job, but maybe the chemistry really isn't there. Or maybe there's no Azinger and Tirico in the booth with him. You know, Tillman's a good broadcaster, and yet at the same time, she's a female, which is in itself odd for a main, you know, someone in the booth calling men's golf to be a female. We have Judy Rankin and Dottie Pepper, both very good on-course reporters, but they're not in the booth. So,
right. Well, I chalk up some of the, you know, those criticisms to the fact that, you know, these guys are now lead block, and they're right out there in the front. Faldo obviously was one of a few And so it's going to be tougher for him to be kind of witty, and he's not going to be thinking as much. Well, he's going to be thinking more on his feet these days.
Yeah, well, I hope the relationship develops a little bit further and Kelly and Nick really hit it off, so to speak, and develop a sort of chemistry, because those are the people in the booth. So that's who we have. Perhaps familiarity will breed a bit of a chemistry there, and we'll see a little bit more of a loose and relaxed thing. It's very new to both of them. Some of the camera angles I also saw noted on the internet were interesting. A lot of people liked how the camera views were on the driver, where you could see the ball going off, you know, in the distance. You could see it rising, and you know, you could really follow the flight of the ball for a long time. And so people found that interesting. Of course, early round coverage, when the wind was especially nasty, the ball was being lost in the sky half the time, and it was not so great. But
it was pretty rough. I forget which par three it was, but they had a boom. They had a camera on a boom on one of the par threes looking from behind, and that was pretty rough. They were way up above the green, and it would have worked had the wind not been blowing. So,
and not too many times you're going to find winds like you do in Hawaii, so we'll give them a pass on that one. And hey, at the same time, it was kind of nifty. You know, a lot of the corporate stuff was out of the way, except they mentioned the sponsors frequently. A lot of the, you know, we got to see more golf, I think. And we got to see 4 full hours of coverage without being worried about cutting to some basketball game or 60 minutes, you know, or something. So a plus there. I don't know. We'll see how it turns out the rest of this year.
Yeah, and I hope it turns out well for those who, obviously one of the biggest minuses to having coverage on the Golf Channel is the fact that not everybody's going to get it. Some have complained that, I can't get the Golf Channel because it's part of an expensive cable package. And so, you know, perhaps locking some casual viewers out.
One of the quirks of the PGA Tour signing with the Golf Channel for 15 long years. So we'll be right back after this ad from Titleist.
In the heat of competition, you should really stick to your go-to shot. For me, that's a tight little draw.
Copy your practice swing and don't think about results.
Just take your time, keep everything nice and slow.
When I'm under pressure, I think about my kids.
I think of my kid too.
Keep it simple, play one shot at a time.
Don't be tentative, stay real aggressive.
Make sure and drink lots of water.
Concentrate on concentrating.
Don't think too much.
Just remember to breathe.
And don't panic.
And one more tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
Welcome back from that ad from Titleist. This week in our forum topic, we're going to hone in on what your goals are for 2007. Everybody's thinking about emerging from the winter slumber and getting out there and playing. Some of us have more of an opportunity to play than others. So how about you, Eric? Do you have any goals for your game in 2007?
Yeah, I think it's very important to write your goals down. Of course, we have a forum where it makes it very easy to write it down and then check back in a year. Very easy to find. And also, you know, to check out the goals of other people's, because maybe one of their goals is something that you didn't think of, so you could add it to your list. But you know, I borrowed heavily from my list from 2006. I want to practice more this year. I didn't practice nearly as much as I should have last year. You know, given the choice between hitting the range and playing, I opted to play a little bit more than I should have perhaps last year. I'm still at around a 3.5 index. I want to get that down to a 3 or 3.0. I was down to a 3.2 for a while. And the toughest one, you know, is mentally committing to every shot prior to hitting it, you know, anything outside of a foot and a half anyway. You know, it's very easy to just be goofing around with some buddies and step up and hit a tee shot and be like, I really didn't even think about that one. So I want to try to commit to every shot. It's, you know, if I can hit 85%, 90%, that'll probably be a good year. We'll see how that turns out. Work on the short game, improve my leg. One round in the 60s, then I have some stats that I want to meet because I keep track of all my statistics. How about you? What did you have for 2007?
Well, you know, kind of looking back, I'm still fairly new to the game, and I worked pretty hard on and have been working hard on the mechanics end of things. We had a discussion going on the forum about my grip. That really, really helped. Actually, I haven't mentioned that to you, but I think loosening up my grip some, getting it out of my palms and right into my fingers has really helped my results. So I'm going to something that you always focus on is mechanics, but I'm going to try to kind of step away from that and look more at game management, focus on relaxing my forearms, my body, you know, stand in a relaxed but athletic kind of position, and then think 60%. You know, I tend to be kind of an all-out guy, especially, but I really want to focus on just relaxing, taking the club back easy, keeping my tempo good, and allow some of those mechanical things that I've been so focused on the last couple of years to kind of happen instead of trying to overthink
right.
them. And I've done that the past couple of weeks, past 3 weeks I played. I think I was able to kind of step outside the mechanics. And so that's it for me. Game management, allow the game to kind of come to me, allow those things that I've been working on to kind of flow instead right. of forcing them. So
yeah, I think it's very important to everyone that's listening and stuff. Write your goals down. If you want to do it in our forum, you'll find the link in our show notes, of course. But write them down. Put them on a sticky note and stick it on your desk where you'll see it every day, even. But write them down, because writing them down really helps you, both reinforces it and also reminds you daily of what they were. So write it down and stick to them. If you keep statistics, write down some statistical things that you want to meet. Be realistic, because, you know, an unreachable goal is really just a morale killer. You know, don't write down that you want to have 25 putts around. Nobody has 25 putts around, so yeah, unless you just play 9 holes, in which case you right. probably want to aim lower. You know, write them down and really try to stick to them, make them realistic, and shoot for them. Because the sense of accomplishment you get when you actually achieve them is rewarding above and beyond what golf has to offer. We'll be right back after this second ad from Titleist. Stay with us again.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. This week in our Beating Balls segment, we'll lead off with Michelle Wee, an older story from December, but one we haven't had a chance to talk about. Following in the footsteps of one Tiger Woods, Michelle Wee has been accepted to Stanford, where she will enroll next fall. I don't know what. She's not going to play on the golf team because she's a professional, so she will really try to graduate, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's right. Well, she noted that Tiger Woods only lasted 2 years, and so she says, hopefully I'll last a little longer. I don't know. I would like to know what motivated her to go to Stanford, other than the fact that Tiger Woods was there. And maybe she's trying to follow in his footsteps and be the woman equivalent of Tiger Woods. But I thought that was a little odd. But of course, I have no idea what the thinking was there.
People will point out, of course, that her father, BJ, is a professor at the University of Hawaii. But yeah, you really choose a college based on what you want to do. You know, if she plans to be a professional golfer, you know, a good major for her might be studying something like marketing right. or sports management or something, so that she could capitalize on her talent herself, you know, and be a decent, have a good business mind as well, perhaps. You know, in Stanford, I don't know that they're a good publicity kind of school or a good PR type school or a good sports management type of school. I guess they're a good business school, but there are better business schools too mm-hmm. For the hardcore business person. So, you know, you really pick a college based on, you know, a number of things. Location obviously won't matter to her. She's in Hawaii. Price isn't going to matter to her, but then there's strengths. And, you know, I don't know that Stanford has the strengths. We don't know what her intended goal is, you know, or what she wants to study. We're assuming that maybe she's going there because Tiger Woods did. Give her the benefit of the doubt, but at the same time, it's a little funny.
It is a little funny.
I think it has the markings of, yet again, of BJ's imprints and not Michelle's decision-making.
Price.
Of course, Tiger Woods, the man of the year, the sports man of the year. And in a related story, Lorena Ochoa, the AP, the Associated Press's top female athlete of the year. So golfers sweep the top athlete of the year awards from the Associated Press.
Yeah, no surprise with Tiger Woods. Obviously, the kind of year that he had. We had been talking again
about... It wasn't Floyd Landis, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, obviously not. Yeah, as far as we know, Tiger's not taking hits,
right?
You know, on the bong before tournaments, but... You know, no surprise there after talking about, you know, everyone was asking, is Phil Mickelson the new best golfer in the world? And then, of course,
well, we were talking about that a year ago, too.
Yeah. Yeah. But then that all kind of came crashing down. And then here's Tiger again emerging from whatever hullabaloo that was going around the golf world.
Right. And Lorena Ochoa, you know, no longer can you say really that Annika Sorenstam is the best female golfer in the world. That torch has been passed to Lorena Ochoa. Despite, you know, she ends Annika's 5-year reign, but really not the number of majors and stuff yet, building up yet, but a number of solid performances, you know, finally coming out and besting Annika Sorenstam in a head-to-head tournament where they played together and a number of things that we talked about last year. Lorena Ochoa doing it when a lot of the younger Americans are still not quite finding their stride. You know, the Paula Creamers, the Christy Kerrs, the Natalie Gold was still winless, etc. And here, Lorena Ochoa, 4 years out of the Futures Tour, the best female golfer in the world.
She had an outstanding year. The only thing that I would say is, and I'm not so sure Annika's going to, you know, turn things around. And I don't know that she's going to be the same Annika that we've seen the past several years.
I think her interests are wandering elsewhere. She's got her academy and things going on, so.
Well, that very well could be. You know, you had Tiger Woods kind of take a back seat to Vijay way back in 2004. So is that possible? Yeah, it's possible. I don't think that Annika's, that comparison's necessarily fair.
Well, I expect Lorena Ochoa to continue to put pressure on Annika Sorenstam, even though technically it should be coming from the other direction now. But I don't expect Lorena Ochoa to back off. I'll put it that way. Should be interesting. Hopefully, again, the young Americans will step up and do something as well to now challenge Lorena. One young American coming into the fold in an undetermined amount of time will be the offspring of one Tiger Woods and some Swedish model nanny twin. hopefully his wife. Yeah, Tiger and Elon once announced that they will, well, that she's a twin, so you never know.
Well, he might be confused.
He could have gotten it mixed up, I don't know. Yeah, so anyway, Tiger and Elon are expecting a child. They won't say when the child is due. Yeah, that's about all we know about that, except Tiger Woods is going to have a kid.
Yeah, good news for them. Congratulations.
I just hope they don't name it Earl.
That would be bad. They might adopt a Norwegian-type name. You never know.
Of course, Tiger Woods deciding to skip the season-opening Mercedes Championship. This after skipping the Tour Championship at the end of last year. So basically, like Adam Scott, starting the year as he ended it by continuing the same behavior. you know, we got on Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods last year for skipping the Tour Championship. Should they have made the trip to Hawaii to compete in the Mercedes?
Well, sure, for the betterment of the Tour, they should have. But I think that, you know, a guy like Tiger and Phil Mickelson are thinking now, okay, what's the most important thing on the Tour? There are four majors I got to win, and there's some events that I want to use to prepare for those. Maybe there's some events that they want to support for various reasons. The fact that they won them, they have to be back there to defend. Right. They're thinking in terms of golf history here. So, yeah, sure, for the betterment of the Tour, and it would have been great to see them jump in there and be out there competing against Vijay Singh. It would have been interesting to see Tiger playing against Vijay, especially the kind of event that Vijay had. So, right. Yeah, they're thinking in terms of history, not in terms of what's best for their fellow players.
Right, and of course, Tiger Woods, the one, not to make excuses for him or anything, but normally his target world event happens like a week after Thanksgiving, and this year it was pushed back till December 17th. Normally I'm saying he basically has the entire month of December off. Right. This year he was given 2 weeks. So some have said that may have been a deciding factor in him skipping the Mercedes Championship. He has gone over to Hawaii before. He likes playing the course and stuff. So maybe, maybe not. But, you know, he owes people. People say, oh, they owe it to the fans. And while we as fans feel that way, they owe 15 events to the PGA Tour to retain their membership. That's really all that is said. So that's what they owe technically. It'd be nice to see them play. But like I said on the forum, I'd rather see Tiger Woods play 15 events at his best than 25 kind of, you know, schlopping it around. And the same is true of Phil Mickelson. So
yeah, and no surprise to us. Again, you know, keep in mind that they're playing for history. They're playing for their favorite events. The top four are going to be the majors. And then they're going to kind of cherry pick the ones that they do for various reasons, whether it's Ford or Buick or any of these number of them.
Well, let's before we look ahead to 2007, let's look back at an article from Gary Van Sickle of the most overlooked stories of the year of 2006. First one came up recently in our forum as well. Tiger Woods had a winning Ryder Cup record. He was 3-2. He won the most points for the U.S. team of any other U.S. team members, despite playing with a Jim Furyk who clearly wasn't helping him too much, and despite not playing that well. Phil Mickelson, on the other hand, had, what, a half a point or something, or 0-4-1, I believe he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tiger Woods had a winning Ryder Cup record. So.
Yeah, that was great, and that kind of turns on its head all of this talk that you know Tiger just doesn't or can't play well or doesn't care in the Ryder Cup. Well, he did well.
Annika Sorenstam was knocked off her pedestal. We talked about that already, Lorena Ochoa. Of course, stepping up and taking the number one spot, and Michelle Wee knocking her off the media pedestal anyway, taking much of the media acclaim or criticism or discussion anyway. Mickelson It says, forgotten in the wake of the Mickelson-Fred couple's love-in during the final round in Augusta is the fact that Rocco Mediate had a chance to win the Masters. Very true, until he slipped on the one hole, 15 or 13, and it hurt his back a little bit more, but it was really right up there the whole time. So interesting that most people forget about that. Most people forget, too, already. I find that Freddie Couples had a chance to win the Masters if he could have only putted like a half-competent guy. Hale Irwin didn't win on the Champions Tour in 2006. It's been a long time since that's happened, of course. Two quick ones here. Jack Nicklaus retires for good, probably, and golf is done on ABC and ESPN. Mm-hmm. Number seven is Jeff Ogilvie's final nine at the U.S. Open was the best display of clutch golf since Retief Goosen's string of up and downs at Shinnecock Hills. Tough to disagree with that one. Certainly beat Phil's performance on the back nine, or most of the week, you know, driving into the rough, topping that four wood a couple feet. The most amazing shot of the year that no one remembers came from Monty. Debatable here. Montgomery, of course, holed a 50-foot birdie putt on the 17th hole to tie for the U.S. Open lead. Of course, then he, you know,
choked.
Flubbed it up on the last hole. Well, flubbed it up. We'll go with that. Ernie Els won a tournament in South Africa in December. This doesn't really belong on the list. Who cares? He played against a small field and in South Africa. So let's see what he does on the PGA Tour this year. He really needs to bring it back. You know, he had all of last year to do something and really didn't do it. Two drivers in Phil's bag. Meltdown of the year. I don't think many people forgot about that one.
Not me.
Except, it says here, one side benefit of Mickelson's misfortune was that golf fans forgot about Greg Owen's disaster at Bay Hill. We talked about that, of course, on our podcast where he missed a 3-foot putt, walked around the hole and hit it, missed another 2-foot putt right after it. So,
yeah.
Three putting from 3 feet.
That's painful.
That about does it for episode 43 of the Golf Talk podcast. Again, we'll be resuming our normal weekly publishing or broadcasting schedule from here on out. Thanks to Jeff Smith again for joining me, and ta-ta for now, guys.
See ya. Goodbye.